Mahabharata, Chapter 15, The Celestial Hall. Soon after Maya began his work on the hall, Krishna approached Yudhisthira and asked his permission to return to Dwarka. He had been away for months and now desired to again see his relatives. Yudhisthira gave his permission reluctantly, knowing he would miss his beloved friend. Krishna then said his farewells, first going to Kunti and touching her feet in respect. Shedding tears, Kunti embraced Krishna and said, "My dear Keshava, you are the supreme soul of this universe. You are always kindly disposed toward everyone, but you especially protect your devotees. From the day that Akura arrived in Hastinapur, I knew you were thinking of the welfare of myself and my sons. I am confident that whatever difficulties we may experience are arranged by Providence for our ultimate good." Krishna smiled at Kunti and then left her, promising that he would return before long. He then went to see his sister Subhadra and bid her an affectionate farewell. After that, Krishna went to Draupadi, who cried at the thought of his departure. Like her husbands and mother-in-law, Draupadi thought constantly of Krishna. She bowed at his feet and worshipped him, praying that he might soon return. After performing the due rites of departure, and after offering charity to the Brahmins, Krishna mounted his chariot along with Satyaki, who had remained with him in Indraprastha to learn archery from Arjuna. Surrounded by the five Pandavas, Krishna looked like Indra surrounded by the gods. He proceeded slowly along the royal highway toward the city gate. Thousands of citizens lined the streets, shouting and waving, as Krishna departed in his chariot, drawn by Shaibya and Sugriva, and bearing the sign of Garuda. Yudhisthira mounted the chariot and personally took the reins. Arjuna stood on the chariot fanning Krishna with a golden-handed chamara whisk. Bhima held a white parasol over Krishna's head, and Nakula and Sahadev walked ahead on either side of his chariot, clearing the way. The Pandavas accompanied Krishna out of the city for 4 miles. Krishna told them then to return home. He bowed to Yudhisthira, who tearfully raised him and said with affection, "My dear Krishna, I do not know what kind of pious activities we must have performed in previous lives, so that now you are so gracious to us. Even highly renounced yogis and mystics attain a sight of you only with great difficulty. Yet we are householders engaged in politics and worldly affairs. I do not understand why you are so kind to us." Krishna smiled and asked Yudhisthira if he could leave for Dwarka. Yudhisthira assented, and with great difficulty Krishna persuaded the Pandavas not to follow him. He told them he would always be ready to assist them whenever they needed him. They need only to think of him. Krishna then urged his horses onward, and the five brothers stood together gazing at his chariot as it disappeared into the distance. They then slowly returned to Indraprastha, their minds absorbed in thoughts of their friend from Dwarka. A few days after Krishna left, Maya, having completed all his designs and plans, began his actual construction. On an auspicious day marked by favorable stars, the Asura measured out a piece of land 5,000 cubits square. Before commencing work, he distributed charity to thousands of Brahmins. He arranged for them to be fed with the finest of foods and gave them wealth, invoking their blessings before he began. Maya then erected thousands of golden pillars, upon which he constructed a splendorous assembly hall. After 14 months, the hall was completed. It appeared like a mass of clouds rising in the sky, and its celestial effulgence seemed to darken the sun's rays. It was spacious, cool, delightful, and filled with wealth. With its golden walls and archways inlaid with celestial gems, and its crystal stairways worked with coral, the hall surpassed even the Yadu's Sudharma Hall. In its center was a beautiful artificial pond, filled with lotuses and lilies, whose stalks were made of brilliant gems, and with other flowers and leaves made of gold and silver. On its clear waters there were also real lotuses in full blossom. Swans, karandavas, and chakravarkas swam about on its surface, and golden-colored turtles played on its bottom. The sides of the pond were set with costly marble slabs, studded with pearls, and all about it were celestial flowers, shivering in a gentle breeze. The hall was adorned with gardens full of ever-blossoming trees, and the air was filled with a delicious fragrance that mixed with the scent of the lotuses on the lake. Maya arranged for 8,000 powerful rakshasas, known as kinkaras, to guard that hall. Keeping themselves invisible, the well-armed rakshasas, who had massive bodies and fearful faces, arrow-shaped ears and blood-red eyes, stationed themselves all around the hall, ever alert to danger. The Asura then reported to Yudhisthira that the hall was ready for occupation. Yudhisthira consulted with the Brahmins and selected an auspicious day to enter the hall. He fed and gave charity to thousands of Brahmins, and along with his brothers, worshipped Vishnu and the gods. A ceremony was arranged, and actors, bards, singers, and wrestlers exhibited their skill for the Pandavas' pleasure. A feast was then distributed to all of Indraprastha's citizens. Precisely at noon, the Pandavas, followed by crowds of rishis, entered their hall through the enormous golden doors at its eastern entrance. They took their places on the jewel-crusted thrones at the head of the main hall. Around them sat the rishis and many kings who had been invited from other countries. In that assembly were seen numerous famous rishis, such as Asita, Devala, Vyasadev, Maitreya, Parvat, Markandeya, Jaimini, Bhrigu, and hundreds of others. All the virtuous sages had their mind and senses under full control, and they looked like so many full moons shining amidst the assembly. The Pandavas listened respectfully as the rishis recited Vedic histories to invoke auspiciousness. The kings in attendance then stepped forward one by one to make offerings to Yudhisthira and to worship him with all honor. Chitrasena, the Gandharva leader, arrived with the Apsaras. Along with the Charanas descended from the heavens, they entertained the assembly with celestial music and dance. Worshipped and entertained by such beings, Yudhisthira resembled Brahma, seated in his own hall on the highest planet in the universe. Suddenly the Pandavas saw Narada Rishi appear by his mystical power. Dressed in a black deer skin, with his golden hair knotted on the top of his head, he seemed like a brilliant sun rising in the hall. Yudhisthira and his brothers immediately stood in respect. They bowed low to Narada, who was accompanied by Parijata, Raivata, and Sumukha, three other powerful sages. Yudhisthira offered all the rishis seats, and they sat peacefully as the Pandavas worshipped them with sacred offerings, as well as with precious gems and jewels. Gratified, the sages were joyous to behold the wonderful assembly hall. Narada said, "O king, is your wealth being spent properly for the protection of the people? Is your mind fixed in virtue? Are you enjoying the pleasures of life? I trust that you do not sacrifice religion for the sake of profit, nor profit for the sake of religion, nor indeed both religion and profit for the sake of pleasure, which easily tempts men." Narada continued to question Yudhisthira on a variety of subjects, his questions effectively constituting a number of instructions on the art of kingship. Yudhisthira sat with folded palms and listened attentively. The entire assembly remained silent as Narada, the foremost of the rishis, spoke. His knowledge and wisdom were famed throughout the universe. Narada was fully acquainted with every aspect of the Vedic teachings, and he was renowned as a great devotee and servant of the Supreme Lord. He knew the Lord's desire, and his movements and actions were always arranged to assist the divine plan. The Pandavas were reverent as he instructed them. The whole aim of the monarch Narad explained, was to keep his people on the path of progressive spiritual life, helping them advance toward life's ultimate goal of emancipation, while ensuring that they were protected and had all of their material needs provided. As Narada finished his instructions, Yudhisthira thanked him and said, "O great sage, you have asked me if my study of scripture, my wealth, and my marriage are all successful. Please tell me how I can succeed in these things." Narada, who had ended his speech with those three questions, replied, "Scriptural knowledge is successful when it results in humility and good conduct. Wealth is successful when it is both enjoyed and given away in charity. And marriage is successful when the wife is enjoyed and bears offspring." Concluding his instructions, the Rishi said, "O great king, be sure that you are always free of the five evils which assail men: excessive sleep, fear, anger, weakness of mind, and procrastination." Yudhisthira again bowed to Narada and took hold of his feet, saying, "I shall surely do all that you have said. My knowledge has been increased by your wise words." Yudhisthira replied in detail to all of Narada's questions. When he finished, the sage blessed him by saying, "That king who properly performs his duties will pass his days in happiness, and at the end of his life he surely ascends to the regions of heavenly happiness." Yudhisthira became curious to learn from Narada about the assembly halls possessed by the gods. He wondered if there were any equal to the one Maya had built for him. In the presence of the many kings and sages in his hall, Yudhisthira asked, "O great Rishi, you can travel with the speed of the mind and go anywhere within the universe. Please tell me of all the assembly halls you have seen. Do any of them equal mine?" The Pandava asked Narada to describe in detail the other halls, as well as who was to be found in them, who waited upon Indra in his hall, and who upon Yamaraj, which fortunate souls attended Brahma in his hall. Yudhisthira's inquiry was pointed. He wanted to know where his ancestors, the great kings of the past, had gone. He was especially eager to hear of his father Pandu. Had Pandu attained the highest heaven? Yudhisthira waited expectantly for Narada to reply. Narada described the great halls belonging to all the principal gods, beginning with that of Indra. Indra's hall is 150 yojanas long, more than 1,000 miles, and 100 yojanas wide, and it shines with the splendor of the sun. It is capable of dispelling grief, fatigue, fear, and weakness. Indra sits there in a magnificent ethereal form, adorned with a brilliant crown and bracelets, wearing effulgent white robes. He is decorated with celestial garlands of many hues. By his side sits personified beauty, fame, and glory. Narada named all the rishis and other personalities who wait upon the king of the gods. Faith, intelligence, and learning are all present in his court, as are sacrifice, charity, religion, profit, and pleasure. But there was only one earthly king from the past, the royal sage Harishchandra. Narada went on to describe Yamaraja's hall. His hall is a full 100 yojanas square and is delightful in every way. No pain of any kind exists within that hall, and it contains every object of desire, both celestial and human. It could travel anywhere in the universe according to its owner's will. Time and death personified sit on either side of Yamaraj, and countless rishis surround him. Gandharvas and apsaras entertain the occupants of the hall with music and dance. The scent of divine perfumes fills the air. Narada named the personalities who wait upon Yamaraj, which included all the monarchs in Yudhisthira's line, ending with Pandu. Narada then described Varuna's hall, and then that of Kuvera, the lord of wealth. Both those halls were opulent beyond imagination, being filled with gold and gems, and inhabited by numerous gods and rishis and their shining consorts. Narad told Yudhisthira about Brahma's hall. The actual form of that mystical hall cannot be ascertained, as it can assume various indescribable forms from moment to moment. The hall is made of celestial gems, which constantly change hue, and it appears to be suspended in the firmament by its own power. The self-effulgent hall knows no deterioration, and it continuously increases the happiness of its occupants. Brahma sits there surrounded by the personified forms of mind, space, knowledge, sound, touch, form, taste, scent, nature, all the elements and the prime causes of the universe. Present also are the sun, moon, all the stars and constellations, joy, aversion, asceticism, understanding, patience, wisdom, forgiveness, fortune, and all the Vedas. Yudhisthira and his brother sat in rapt attention as Narad spoke about the immeasurable splendor and opulence of Brahma's hall. He named all the chief progenitors and all the principal gods and goddesses who waited upon Brahma. When Narad stopped speaking, Yudhisthira began to question him further. He wanted to know why only Harishchandra, out of all the great kings of the past, had attained to Indra's abode. He also wanted Narad to tell him about his meeting with Pandu. What did Pandu say to the sage, and how is he faring now in Yamaraja's assembly? Narad explained that Harishchandra had reached Indra's planet because he had performed the great Rajasuya sacrifice. That sacrifice involved subjugating all other kings and distributing charity to hundreds of thousands of Brahmins, and it had set Harishchandra apart from the other kings. Narad then told Yudhisthira that Pandu had given him a message for his son. If Yudhisthira could also perform the Rajasuya, then both he and Pandu could reach Indra's kingdom. Pandu felt that his sons were now capable of performing such an incomparable sacrifice. If they were successful, then father and sons would be reunited in heaven. Both Narada and Pandu understood that the gods had their own purpose to fulfill through Yudhisthira's performance of the Rajasuya. It was part of a divine plan meant to free the world of demoniac influences. There were presently many evil kings and kshatriyas inhabiting the earth. Before beginning the sacrifice, Yudhisthira would need to overpower them. Only then would he be able to perform the Rajasuya, and only then would he be able to establish piety and virtue throughout the world. Narada looked around at the five brothers who sat humbly before him. He knew they were dear to Krishna, who wanted to use them as instruments to fulfill his own desire to re-establish religion upon the earth. Narada concluded, "Therefore, O King, you should perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. The celestials have ordained it. I shall return when the sacrifice begins. Now I am going to Dwarka, for I desire to see Krishna, under whose will this entire universe is moving." Narada stood up to leave, and Yudhisthira requested him to ask Krishna to again visit Indraprastha. Narada agreed, and the Pandavas bowed before him and his companions. The rishis then departed into the sky by their mystic power. After Narada's departure, the Pandavas continued to live peacefully at Indraprastha. But Yudhisthira was contemplating how he might perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. He knew that it required vast wealth. It also necessitated his being able to re-establish his indisputable power over all other kings. How would it ever be possible? There were certain kings who would never accept him as their emperor. The mighty Jarasandha of Magadha, for example. Jarasandha was wicked, and he had already conquered all the districts surrounding his kingdom. Yudhisthira had even heard that Jarasandha imprisoned the kings he defeated with the intention to sacrifice them to Shiva. Jarasandha was ambitious. He already had designs on the emperor's seat, and he was not an easy opponent to defeat. Yudhisthira thought of Krishna, realizing that he would only be able to perform the Rajasuya with his help. Yudhisthira's kingdom was flourishing under his leadership, and his citizens were devoted to piety. They had everything they desired. The Pandavas saw the citizens as family. Yudhisthira was more than a father to them, and no one in the kingdom entertained any hostile feelings toward him. Gradually he became known as a Jatashatru, one without an enemy. And due to his religious leadership, the gods were also pleased, and thus the kingdom was not afflicted by fire, disease, or other natural disturbances. Still thinking about the sacrifice, Yudhisthira called an assembly of ministers and advisers. When they were all seated in the great council chamber of the Pandavas' hall, which was called the Mayasabda, Yudhisthira began to address them, his voice resounding like a bass drum. I wish to perform the Rajasuya. Having been asked to do so by the great sage Narada, I can understand that the gods must surely desire it. I do not want dominion over this earth for myself, but I wish to fulfill the gods' purpose, and especially that of the Supreme Lord. Yudhisthira also considered that if he invited Krishna to the sacrifice, he could arrange that he be honored as the chief person present. That would establish the Lord's fame and position over all the world. Krishna was superior even to the greatest gods, such as Brahma and Shiva. Yudhisthira expected those gods to attend his sacrifice. So if people saw them worshipping Krishna as supreme, then his position above those deities would be established. Then Domya spoke, O King, you are worthy to become the emperor of this world. Therefore perform this sacrifice and establish yourself as such. We shall light the six fires and chant the sacred mantras. But first you must gain the acquiescence of the world's monarchs. After that you will surely have become the undisputed king of this wide earth. Having gained the permission of his priests and counselors, Yudhisthira discussed the means by which he might proceed. They all agreed that he should immediately consult Krishna. Krishna would certainly provide infallible assistance. Yudhisthira then thought of Krishna all the more intensely, praying that he might soon come to his assistance.